Blog Talk Radio.
Call in and join the conversation, just dial 646-668-8740 and join us, because we would like to hear from you. But I want to welcome, there's a lot of the panelists are on right now, and I want to welcome them and say hello. You guys are all ready, and I'd like to get started because, you know, we talk about gun control so much, and I just wanted to bring up because, you know, fathers need to be aware, and mothers too, but now, you know, with the courts, like, who is actually accountable for mass shootings these days? It's no longer only the person who pulled the trigger. Last month, a jury convicted a lady named Jennifer Crumbly of 4 counts of involuntary manslaughter in connection to the 2021 Oxford High School shooting. So that's 1 count for each student that her son killed. And they will, on Tuesday, the father is being brought up on charges also. So it looks like, you know, prosecutors over the past few years have been slowly but steadily expanding the notion of who can be held accountable for mass shootings. Now they're going after the parents. They're going after security personnel. They're going after people who made the guns. So do you think that's an approach that the court should be going? Let's go with first online was Ron. What do you think about that?
Thank you, David, and hello, everybody. Glad to be back after a little absence. I don't know. That's a tough one for me because I think the first and foremost, the person who pulls the trigger is the one that should be responsible, in my opinion. And, you know, yes, I think the parents, depending on the circumstances, because it's not always the case, you know, if the parents have a gun legally at home and it's secured the way it needs to be or whatever, and the kid breaks in or somehow finds a way to get the gun and kill people, you know, why should the parents be held responsible? They did everything they needed to do, you know. So I guess they would have to investigate and see what led up to the person who did the shooting getting the gun. Also, you know, the age is a big factor too. You know, if it's a minor, then obviously the parents are negligent because if a minor can get to a gun, there must have been something that wasn't secure for that to happen. So I think first, the perpetrator needs to be held responsible, even if they're underage. I mean, you know, because nowadays you've got 12, 13, 14 year olds that are out there creating havoc. And, you know, if something isn't done to curtail what they're doing at that young age, can you imagine what they're going to be doing when they're 20, 25? So I think they need to be held accountable. But the parents, depending on the circumstances.
Well, in this particular case, it was that the father bought the son the gun and put it in his name and was training him how to use it, and so was the mother also teaching the child. So that's why they got convicted. But let's go on. Michael, what are your thoughts?
Hey, David. Thanks for calling. This is a very good topic, actually. I followed this case pretty close, and I'm kind of torn. My first reaction was no, the parents should not be held accountable. Like Ron was saying, the person who pulled the trigger is who's responsible. But in this particular case, it seemed like to me the mom egged him on. So that's a little different. It seemed like the mom knew what he was going to do. She told him about it.
She could have stopped it, but she kind of pushed him in the direction of doing it. That's what I gathered when I saw the trial on this one. So in that regard, I would say, yeah, the mom and the, should be definitely held responsible. But normally I'm like, no, it's not fair. It's just the kid. You can't punish the parents for something a bad, out-of-control kid did. But to be honest, to me, it's just a scapegoat. It's just they're looking for a person to blame when they really should be blaming the legislators in Washington, D.C., who won't pass any meaningful legislation that's going to curtail all of these mass shootings. Okay, if anybody should go to jail, it should be the lawmakers for not fixing this problem, not the parents.
All right, Tony, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I do agree on that point. Hello, David. But I also think of in a situation where if you have a carload of persons go and someone shoots a gun, or if they go rob a store, they're also put in trial and convicted, everyone that was part of that situation. They just don't convict the trigger person. They also try and convict the other people that are involved that was there at the time. So, yes, I think the parents should be held responsible, especially when you're going to purchase a gun for an underage person. Reality, a gun does one thing. The gun doesn't really do it, but a gun serves one purpose, and that's to harm or kill someone. Why would anyone think of putting into the hands of an underage kid a gun? It serves one purpose, and that child does not think about the positive side of it being used in a defensive purpose. They primarily will use it to kill someone, and that's what they're doing. So the parents should be held responsible for even thinking of purchasing a gun for someone that's underage. It should not happen.
All right. Don, what are your thoughts?
Thank you for calling on me, David. He is under the jurisdiction and residency of that parent's home. Is that correct?
Yes.
So therefore, the parents have authority over what comes in and comes out. In this case, they were training him, like Michael said, the dad purchased a gun and tried to teach him how to use it. So I think the parents should be responsible. I mean, you're not going to come up in my house and call rank up on me, my son, my daughter, nobody. As for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord and we're going to run this house. And I'm going to keep it like that. I'm very protective as to what comes in and out of my house. I think this is going to set a precedent. This case is going to set a precedent among what we're talking about for years to come. I'll leave it like that.
All right. Thank you. Darius, what are your thoughts?
I agree with the panelists so far, Michael and Ron, but for a different reason. I agree that the mother should have been punished, not because she gave her son a firearm, but because she knew that her son was troubled. And from what I understand, there have been several cases where it's come to their knowledge that the son needed mental help, and he had mental health issues. And I think for that reason alone, knowing that he had those issues and those problems, and you still put a gun in his hands, then, yeah, they deserve prosecution. Now, that case is going to carry precedent, like Don said, but the thing is you have different scenarios. So a gun was put in my hand at the age of 13. I grew up on a farm. Now, I didn't have a gun personally. It belonged to my father, my grandfather, but when we went hunting or we went out on the farm to, like, repair fence lines or pasture, it was known that this is the gun I always use. My brother had one that he always used. And from the time of 13, we had firearms in our hands. Never shot anybody. Never thought about going to school and shooting up someone. And I'm sure my father and my grandfather, who both had guns and trained us how to hunt and how to use guns, never, ever condoned that kind of behavior and that activity. So if I did do that, I would say there's no way they should have been prosecuted for something like that. But, you know, and Michael went back to what all liberals always go back to. They go to the legislation. Legislation has nothing to do with, like my brother Don always says, the heart condition. Legislation has absolutely nothing to do with the integrity and character of these people out here in the streets. And let's be honest, Michael, if you want to look at where the responsibility lies, the majority in any state that you go in, the majority of gun deaths, the majority of homicide is from youth, from young black men, young Mexican or Latino men using handguns. And the first thing that Missouri wanted to do when those young kids in St. Louis shot up the Super Bowl party is they wanted to blame the legislature. But guess what? Those guns used were handguns. There's no legislature at all talking about handguns. They're talking about long guns and firearms, which for the most part is owned by law-abiding citizens who don't go out and shoot up people. So I just think we got to look at personal responsibility and parenting, because it's these young thugs in the streets that's really committing all of the homicides in America. Most of the gun violence is due to them, and it's a problem because we don't have fathers in the home and we're not parenting our kids correctly. Now, if you want to start talking about persecuting some of these welfare moms, some of these moms in the projects, some of these fatherless homes, and I guarantee you the Democrats' position will change on that.
All right. Mr. Solutions, do you have any comments on this?
No, yeah, just a couple. Those are great points. Excellent, excellent. I would just say I think it's wonderful that the jury came to the decision to hold the parents responsible. I definitely think that is and should have been the case. I think that I heard someone say that guns are just used to kill people. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Guns are used in more instances.
Mr. Solution, you dropped. All right. Something happened to his phone. All right, let's move on. Ron, do you have something you want to bring to the table?
Sure. Thank you for calling on me, David. Actually, it segues perfectly from the conversation we were talking about, and I want to dovetail on something. I think I heard Darius, correct me if I'm wrong, Darius, but I think I heard you say that the majority of shootings are with handguns, and it's mainly African-American and Latino young men. Is that correct?
Yes, the majority of gun violence in the country, yes.
Yeah, so what I wanted to bring up is something that's going on down here in South Florida right now. And Don, you will relate to this. We've got spring break coming up, right? And that's obviously the college kids are out, and they come down here to party. And not just down here, but a lot of places around the country. But, you know, South Florida is one of the hot spots, and South Beach has been for years, and Fort Lauderdale and Daytona, et cetera, et cetera. The city of Miami Beach, let me set the stage real quick. So over the past several years, the violence in South Beach, so Fort Lauderdale spring break goes on. I don't really know what goes on up there, but apparently down here in South Beach, over the past several years, there's been a lot of shootings, a lot of violence. And now the city of Miami Beach Commission, which, by the way, I believe there's not one single black person on there, has decided that they don't want spring breakers to come to Miami Beach anymore, South Beach. So what they're doing, or what they decided to do, is to charge exorbitant fees for parking, like $100, $150 a night. They closed off all the Ocean Drive restaurants. You know, they had the outdoor dining. So that's no longer the case. So for those 2 weeks, there's no outdoor dining. There's no alcohol to be sold after a certain time. I don't know the exact time. But in other words, you're making it almost impossible. Oh, and if you are driving in, right, because most of the violence was from, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, locals, but mostly African-American young men, driving in from town or different parts of South Florida. So now they're stopping every car that's driving in and searching them and running the license plate. It's become like a, I don't even know how to describe it, but, you know, I can't, I mean, what happened to individual freedom? You know, like if you really are a spring breaker and you happen to be African-American and you're coming from Atlanta or LA or wherever, you know, and you have to go through this just because the City of Miami Beach Commission decided to do this. And by the way, now they're fearing that all of the problems are going to move north to Hollywood Beach and Fort Lauderdale. And I just want to get the panelists' opinion, because I think it's a racial move. I could be wrong, but I think they just don't want, you know, the African-American kids down here partying. And so that's why they're doing this.
Don, you want to jump in on that one?
Yes, I do. Ron, you're right on target, my brother. It is a total disgrace. You know, these kids come to South Florida because of the beach and South Beach. And it's been happening for years. They used to have the Freaknik, and they shut that down. And this situation here in South Florida is a direct statement. We don't want black people coming to South Florida for spring break. And they put exorbitant fees upon parking. And I've never seen nothing like it before. But what makes it so bad about it is our people still want to spend their money there. That's what bothers me, Ron. I mean, if you don't want me to come to your house or to your party, then I'm not coming. And the thing is, the prices that they charge these students, man, for a hot dog. How about $10 for a hot dog? How's that sound? You want to spend your money? Come on down to South Beach. You know, the thing is, it's a direct result of keeping black people away from spring break. And that's what it's all about, Ron. I agree with you 100%. It's a travesty. And for the month of March, we're going to hear more about it because these students are out of school and they have nothing to do. And there was no activity. I mean, you take a kid out of school and send them to a nice environment like South Beach, beautiful women, alcohol, and plenty of time on their hand. What do you expect? What do you expect? I mean, you know, it's just a travesty. Now they're going to punish the kids. And you're going to hear a lot about it in the month of March because it's all over the news here in South Florida.
All right, Michael, you have any comments?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, David, for calling on me. Yeah, I'm with you, Ron and Don. This is a travesty. This is just racism 2.0. That's all it is. Again, like you said, Ron, I doubt there are any black people on this commission or on this board that made this decision. And when they were in that room making this decision, I guarantee you they were like, how can we keep these N-words from coming down here destroying our great city? I'm pretty sure that was the language they used. Now, granted, I must admit, I saw what happened last year. And actually, I've been to Miami during spring break. And sometimes it can get a little out of hand, a little out of control. I do agree with that. Sometimes the kids take it a little too far and kind of be destructive. So I do agree with them for coming up with some sort of mechanism to curtail the violence. But I think straight up banning people, it sounds like what they're doing, it's just completely out of line. We're a free country. We're supposed to figure out a way to get police forms and police measures in place to stop these kids from doing this sort of violence. Just straight up outright banning them, yeah, Ron, it's just straight up racism. That's all it is.
All right, Darius, you got thoughts on that?
Yeah, I have a few, but before I say them, I need Ron to clarify something for me. Ron, are they saying, like, how are they going to determine if it's only black kids or not that can come for spring break, or they're saying all spring breakers. So how's
no,
that?
No, they're targeting everybody that goes to South Beach for spring break, and you know, whether you're white, black, whatever. But I think in reality, they're really doing it to stop the black kids from going. But they're targeting anybody that drives there. Their cars are going to be checked. Their license plate is going to be run. Anybody that goes there is going to have to pay $100, $150 for parking. Hotels, I didn't even mention that, but the rates are sky high. So they don't want people to go. But I think the real reason is, like everybody else has said so far, is they don't want the young black kids to, you know, I've heard all kinds of things, you know, ruin the city. I mean, and it's just gotten out of hand.
Okay. So that right there kind of refutes the racism claim, because they're not just saying black kids can't come. But I do believe what you're saying, Ron, and good to have you back too, by the way, man.
Thank you.
I do agree with what you're saying. It's mainly to curtail the black kids. But I'm glad Michael pointed out something that I was going to say, and I'm proud of you, Michael, for having some objectivity, and that is, for the last two spring breaks, black kids have shut Miami down, shut Miami Beach down, South Beach down. So we have to have some kind of accountability here. If you go someplace and you don't know how to act, then you're going to encourage the people who are supposed to be protecting that city, then they have to take a stance. And you're going to encourage stricter law enforcement, stricter rules, because there are people that live there year-round, and they pay their taxes, and they need to be protected from that kind of chaos. So black people got to accept responsibility and stop crying the first time something happens, stop crying racism. Look at how we're acting. Look at how we're behaving, guys. That's the main issue. And the point is, the root cause is what we should be concerned about. Not the fact that, oh, they created a law against us. Well, why in the hell you go to a city you're visiting? Show some respect. People invite you to their city to patronize them, and you go there and you tear the damn city up, which is the same thing that happened here in Atlanta. We used to have Freaknik here in Atlanta. Guess what? Black folks didn't know how to act. They had to shut it down. They want to cry racism. You can cry that all you want, but you can't deny the facts that you went and tore up a city, you blocked up traffic, you shut down stores, you robbed stores, you committed crimes, and now nobody wants you to come into their city. Can you blame them? And I think it would be the same case if it was all white kids that did it, if it was Latino kids that did it, if it was Asian kids that did that. It would be the same thing. Stop putting race on everything, man. It's the behavior of the people. And if the behavior is inappropriate and reckless and dangerous, nobody wants you to come to their city. Plain and simple.
All right.
Real quick, David. Hey, Darius, I agree with you, but I think kind of the problem is, historically, there was a time when black people during the Martin Luther King era, the Civil Rights era, there was a time when black people couldn't go to the beach even though they were behaving the right way. So there was a time when black people weren't acting ignorant like they are now. I agree. And the white people and the police still banned them and tried to stop them. So I kind of think that has a lot to do with this particular situation. A lot of people are drawing on the historical aspect of this.
You know, we had an opportunity to try to change the narrative of this about maybe 3 months ago. And the NAACP put a ban out of banning all conventions held by blacks in the state of Florida. And we were going to change the narrative and have it at Virginia Key Beach, which is a black beach. We don't have to go to South Beach. We could have gone to Virginia Key Beach. But we ran into so much pushback, so much apprehension. We had political leaders that didn't want to touch it, Ron. And by the way, I'm glad to hear you back, man. You bring so much positive light to the man's voice.
Thank you, Don.
We wanted to change the narrative, bring some culture to it, financial literacy, and things like that, different things to occupy the time. But let me tell you something. If you got a lot of free time and alcohol and women, if you like women, man, what do you expect?
All right. All right, let's move on a little bit from time. Michael, do you have something you'd like to bring to it? Well, wait a minute. Let's back up. Solution, I know you got clicked out, but now you're back in. Do you have any thoughts on this particular subject?
No, David. I was just listening and learning.
Okay. All right. Michael, do you have any thoughts you'd like to bring to the table? Hello? Michael.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that, David. I was on mute. Yeah, I want to talk about what's going on with the war right now in between Israel and Hamas. The latest casualty count is 34,000 innocent civilians that are killed in Gaza. And for that reason, America right now, we have to drop supplies from the air into Gaza so that those poor people can get some food and water and things of that nature. Because right now, famine is kicking in, and those people are starving in Gaza. They have no food. Now, my question is, I want to throw it to the panel, is why does America have to airdrop food in there to them when America's the one supplying the weapons that we are also dropping on them to bomb and kill them? So it's kind of hypocritical to me. And my question to the panel is, should we stop supporting Israel and being so supportive of Israel when they won't even let us bring food in through the front door? They're forcing us to drop food from airplanes, but yet they're taking a check from us and taking weapons from us. So that's my question to the panel. Should we stop being such close allies to Israel at this point?
Who wants to take that on?
I'll take it, David.
All right, go ahead.
In a situation where we need to tell Israel, stop. I mean, the same thing was happening to them in the Holocaust. Why don't you stop? I mean, you know, I'm tired of the United States, the sergeant at arm to the world. We need to learn how to take care of home and take care of our own people. You know, here we are. We're going to drop food to a country that we also, like you said, Michael, supply the arms to kill them. We supplied the arms to kill them. We supplied the money to get it done. And now we got to drop food to feed them. Man, I'm so tired of that. We need to learn how to feed our own people. Why don't we drop some food to Los Angeles? Why don't we drop some food to Miami? Why don't we drop some food to New York? Why don't we drop some food to Flint, Michigan?
All right. Any other comments on this particular subject? No?
Yeah, David, I'd like to comment on it.
Okay, go ahead, Darius.
All right. Okay, so, Michael, first of all, we were, I don't know if you knew it before, but Israel was delivering the food to the Gazans, and they always dropped flyers to let them know when they were going to throw bombs and when they were coming. So last week what happened was while Israel was there on a humanitarian mission, they claim that some people from Hamas and some Gazans came at them aggressively. Like, of course, they hate Israel. And so here's the Israeli soldiers trying to administer humanitarian aid, food and medicine, and they attacked them. In the midst of that happening, some civilians got killed. And the Israelis, the IDF had to withdraw. So that's why they're doing the airdrops now rather than bringing them in, because there was some violence that occurred, which caused some deaths to happen. The answer overall question is no, we should not pull out of being Israel's allies because we don't have anyone else in the Middle East if we pull out of Israel. And if you do that, then you have Hamas and Iran taking over the entire Middle East. And I don't know what you guys are thinking, Michael and Don, but they are definitely not going to unite to support America. They're going to unite against America. So it's in our best interest to maintain some type of resistance in the Middle East. Otherwise, it would be the entire Middle East coming together to attack America. Let me finish this one point, Don. Just one thing, because I don't want to forget it. You said today what I've heard almost every liberal say. Why doesn't Israel just stop? Why don't they just stop it? Stop it. Nobody seems to remember that there was a ceasefire in place before October 6th. There was a ceasefire in place before Israel attacked. I mean, before Hamas attacked Israel. And they broke it. So everybody asking for another ceasefire is just really, they don't have any objectivity, are unaware of the fact that these people don't keep agreements. They don't keep. And this thing could end very quickly, guys. I just want to let everybody know this because I never hear anybody on the news say this. Just simply tell Hamas. Wait a minute. Hold on. Just simply tell Hamas, return the hostages. Surrender the terrorists, not the Gazans now, because everybody claims, oh, it's not the Gazans, it's Hamas. Okay. Real simple. Surrender the Hamas terrorists, return the hostages, war is over. War is over, Don. But you don't hear anybody making those claims or nobody asking Hamas to concede to anything. They're asking Israel to just let their people get assassinated and don't retaliate.
Darius, I mean, you know, enough is enough. Israel has made strong strides in the killing people in Gaza. I mean, it's over. I mean, they've already kicked their you-know-what. They've already done that. Now we got President Biden, which has great relationships with both. He's going to lose the election if he doesn't get this thing under control, because in Detroit, it's exploding. It's exploding big time. And the thing is, we got to get this thing under control because it's going to be a powder keg if we don't.
Hey, Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
No one's asking Hamas to release the hostages and surrender the terrorists if that's what you really want. If you really want to see peace, you really want to see this thing stopped, why isn't anybody advocating for that?
All right. Any comments on that? Mr. Solution, I know you got knocked out, but you're back. Do you have any comments on this particular subject?
Well, wow. It's a, man, this is a conundrum. I was at the point initially I said that Hamas was set up and, you know, to actually do the invasion so that this war could commence. It appears that that's what it was, and I actually heard intelligence to that effect. But nevertheless, since it has started, no, I agree that the hostages should be returned, and, of course, humanitarian aid should be allowed in, and I think that just has to be continued to be pushed for so it can be affected in, you know, to the whatever sufficiency. See, we're always talking about degrees here because the ultimate insanity is war. That is the ultimate insanity, but I guess they just have to do the best they can with negotiations until it works its way out. And just one other thing, I have heard some people say they should just let them fight it out. But I don't know if that won't spread and, you know, cause a conflagration that will be even larger than the current crisis. So, but it's a real mess, though, no matter how one views it.
You know, what gets me is we're spreading ourselves thin. We got the war in Israel and Gaza. We got Ukraine. And then we got the border in South America. We're trying to come up with monies to fund all three of these initiatives, all three. And these are major initiatives. Just think about the billions of dollars that we're trying to deal with things that we cannot control. I mean, just think about that, gentlemen. Think about what I just said. Those three issues alone, and here we are, trying to come up with billions of dollars to supply this. That bothers me.
Right. Well, the numbers are at usdebtclock.org if any of you want to go there and actually see the numbers in real time. You're right, though.
But this, I don't think we have a choice. I mean, because this is all, it all boils down to, in my opinion, to our own national security. And if the Middle East, I agree with you, Darius, you know, if we pull out of the Middle East and we stop, you know, our relationship with Israel, that whole entire area is just going to go, you know which way. And that's not good because they are not fans of America. They're not fans of the United States, and they want all of us dead. So I agree that we need to have a presence there. Michael, I do think that Israel has gone too far. I do agree with that. I don't know what they can do about it, but, you know, 35,000 innocent people dead. I mean, did it really have to be that way? I mean, we can figure out how the beginning of the universe, how the universe was created, and we can't figure out how to find, you know, these Hamas people and separate them out from the non-Hamas people and kill them. I mean, I don't understand, but I guess it's more complicated than I want to believe. But I do think Israel has gone too far. But it is, you know, it is kind of hypocritical that we're providing, you know, on the one hand, assistance to Israel, and then we're dropping food, you know, to help the innocent. I mean, it's war. And you know, we've talked about this before, that a lot of people think that the U.S. loves war because it's you know, it's the moneymaker. So I'll leave it at that.
That's true, by the way. That last part you said, because the U.S. is a major arms dealer. So that part is accurate.
But, Ron, I'm going to push back on you a little bit. I don't agree that this is a war. This is a genocide. This is not a war at all. A war is when two forces are fighting it out. Gaza's not fighting back. Gaza's getting squashed like a bug on this one. So to me, this is not a war. This is a straight-up genocide. And Benjamin Netanyahu and the Israelis, they want ethnic cleansing. Okay, they're not just trying to root out Hamas. They're trying to root out all the Palestinians from that area. They want to take control of that land and kill all those Palestinians. Now, Darius, to your point real quick, you said that there was peace before October the 6th. There was a ceasefire. Yeah, but there was still an occupying force within Gaza before October the 6th, before October the 5th, October the 4th, okay? They were killing Palestinians long before October the 6th, okay? So they're not interested in the two-state solution, which they should be interested in. They're not. All they're interested in is killing Palestinians and taking over that land. This is a genocide. This is not a war.
All right. Let's get out of this one and move on. Don, is there something you'd like to bring to the table?
Well, I just think that, no, I'm going to leave it like that, David. I'm going to save what I got to say till later. I don't want to share it right now because I just was thinking about my dear friend, Councilman Eric Mays. If you can remember, a year or two ago, when Flint was going through the water crisis, I had my friend Councilman Eric Mays on our man's voice talking about the Flint water crisis. And he was called home to be with the Lord. He died last week, and they're going to have his home going on this Saturday. And I'm just really looking at Flint, Michigan, because that's my home. And we're looking for leaders to stand up now because there's a lot of problems in Michigan.
Well, Don, you know, it's some position you could fill.
Yeah, I know, but I kind of like South Florida, David.
All right.
David, I have a quick observation.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. And it deals with this Trump election interference. I think this has just been riveting. I think much of the nation has been focused on Fulton, Georgia, I believe it is. And it's just been fascinating to see how the sausage is made, to see how the DA. Now, Fannie Willis did run to the church and claim racism. I think that, I believe his name is Mr. Satow. He did a masterful job at turning that around and talking about how that was, or explaining how that was, violated the code of ethics in doing that. That was polluting, poisoning the well, I guess they would say, in logic. But it seems to me, and I didn't want to believe this, but it seems like Ms. Willis is corrupt to her eyeballs, and she is the ringleader in this, I think much more so than Mr. Wade or the rest of the characters. But I'm just glad to see it being excavated and revealed the way it is. And I think the judge's decision, which is forthcoming, is going to be even more interesting. So that's just, I don't know, do you concur that this has really been riveting nationally? Have you been watching it?
Yes, I have been watching it every day. I follow it closely, Mr. Solution, and you couldn't be more wrong. Okay, finally, Willis is not corrupt from the eyeballs. Who's corrupt from the eyeballs is Donald Trump, the guy who's been indicted. Finally, Willis has not been indicted, nor is she on trial for anything. Okay, so that's just the Republicans trying to turn this into making Donald Trump the victim. So, no, Fannie Willis is not corrupt. She's an honorable stand-up woman who is doing the right thing by going after a criminal. And, yes, she had
okay,
every
you're
right
pretty
to go after
you're
to point
pretty
out
rambunctious liberal, by the way, Michael. I was actually asking David, but since you broke in, I'll just respond to you. If that's okay, David, I will respond to him because this is quite interesting.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, okay, sure. Michael, you are absolutely incorrect. The doctrine of clean hands is absolutely appropriate here. You cannot have an enforcer of the law in stark violation of the law. That's where you've got to start. Now, right, we could get to Trump's involvement if we had a clean hands prosecutor. But I'm really shocked that you could look at all this information from Terrence Bradley and, of course, her best friend that said, see, this stems from her having signed an affidavit, a sworn statement by an officer of the court that she did not have a relationship with Mr. Wade prior to hiring him. Okay, that cannot be obfuscated. Right? And so I think for you to overlook that, and let me just turn the tables, if I may. I would think that if you or anyone that you cared about was being prosecuted by such an unclean hands person, you would be concerned about its legitimacy.
Mr. Solution, that still does not negate the fact that he committed a crime.
He's not been convicted of a crime.
Well, she hasn't either. She can sleep with whoever she wants to sleep with.
Well, it's amazing to me that you miss what I said. She can't sign an affidavit, which is a sworn statement, to something that she knows is untrue. That is a serious violation. That's actually a crime. To perjure oneself is a crime, particularly for an officer of the court. Now, had she not done what she did, then, of course, we could actually proceed with what you're saying. But we can't proceed if we have an officer of the court operating with unclean hands. That's a serious violation, gentlemen.
Are you saying that if she would have said, yes, I have had relationships with him prior to this, she would have been okay? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying she would have been okay, but it would have been a different situation, because then she would not have been she would not have lied to the court. See, there
what does that have to do with the crime that the criminal.
Well, first of all, you're misstating the point. There's a difference in being accused of a crime and convicted of a crime. But see, now we're dealing with her crime. She can't be a criminal and attempting to prosecute someone. That's the way it goes across the board for any DA. And all corrupt DAs should be turned out. They should be in jail themselves. We can't have that in this country. I don't know if you've ever heard the old adage, it's better to allow 10 guilty people to go free than to incarcerate one innocent person. So that's what we're dealing with here, gentlemen.
Okay, if you're saying we need to get rid of dirty prosecutors, I agree with you on that one. There's a lot of dirty prosecutors we could start with getting rid of, but not one of them is not Fannie Willis. The only reason you and people, Republicans, want to get rid of her is because she's going after your king right now. Who is the criminal? Let's keep in mind.
First of all, what you just said is...
I didn't cut you off. We let you talk, so please stop cutting us off and let us talk. You're a guest on this platform. Keep that in mind.
What you said is untrue. Okay. That's all I want to say.
It is not untrue. She has not been indicted. He's been indicted in 4 different jurisdictions. So he's the criminal. So it just amazes me how you can sit here and say she's the dirty criminal, but overlook this dirty Donald Trump and not say that he's the criminal. That's clear hypocrisy. Regardless of who, she's a 52-year-old woman. She could sleep with whoever she wants to sleep with. That has nothing to do with the fact that Donald Trump tried to overturn an election in Georgia. That has nothing to do with that. Those are apples and oranges, and it's a weak case that you guys are trying to make, okay?
Well, I tell you what, I'll just say this. First of all, we need a clean hands prosecutor. And Ms. Willis, based on the evidence, and I can't see how a person such as yourself or any halfway fair-minded person could say that Ms. Willis has not created, if not an actual conflict, certainly the appearance of a conflict. And even the appearance of a conflict now is grounds for removal. And by the way, Ms. Willis has previously been removed from a case that she was prosecuting because of the appearance of conflict. So I think you need to be a little bit more even-handed and look at the evidence on both sides. I have no problem with Donald Trump being called to account for whatever he has done wrong. But I do think this is abuse of the judicial process. I think most of these, or at least all of these charges, are abuse of the process.
All right.
David, can I step
sure.
in for a second?
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Solutions, you're dead on. And what our good brothers Michael and Don are attempting to do is conflate the issues. They want to say Donald Trump, this has nothing to do with, we're not talking about Donald Trump right now, guys. What he's talking about is Fannie Willis and her actions as the district attorney in Fulton County. Say whatever you want about Donald Trump being guilty and a criminal, blah, blah, blah. Guys, get rid of your Trump derangement syndrome. That's not what he's talking about. We're talking about, is Fannie Willis eligible or worthy or qualified to bring charges? You can't be.
That's not true. That's not true, dear. So we're actually talking about, did Donald Trump steal the election? That's what we're talking about. You guys were.
No, we're not.
About
he's
Fannie
talking
Willis.
About Fannie Willis being. He's talking about Fannie Willis being unethical. That's what he's talking about, and that's what we're trying to talk about right now. This has nothing
but that's
to do
not what
right
the
now
case
about
is about. The case is about Donald
we're not talking
Trump.
About
you guys don't
case.
Want to talk
Michael,
about the case.
Michael, let me finish, please. We're not talking about the case. Just like Mr. Solution said, I have no problem if we have a case and Donald Trump is found guilty. I'm fine with that. What we're talking about right now and what the Fulton County Superior Court is talking about, if you want to think it's just us and Trump supporters, obviously the judge saw need to have this stuff discussed. What they're talking about is if Fannie Willis is the person of ethical character and morals to try the case. That's what we're talking about. So you
and
Darius, y'all want to
see Darius? Wait a minute, let me finish. Okay, hey,
I didn't say nothing when y'all were talking, man. I didn't interrupt nobody.
Darius, what you're doing is you're trying to say we need to get the case thrown out. That's what you're trying to say.
That's not what I'm trying to say. I said exactly what I want to say. I think I'm a very good communicator. I said what we're trying to determine is if Fani Willis is eligible to bring the charges. We're not saying the charges should be thrown out. We're saying is she the one? Does she have the moral character?
You're saying shoot the messenger. So shoot the messenger, Harris, is basically what you're saying.
Okay. Hey, guys, can you please let me talk? Please, I didn't say anything when either one of y'all were talking. I was very quiet. I'm just asking you just to let me explain this to you real quick.
That's a fair request, gentlemen. Michael.
Thank you. Thank you. So all I'm saying is what we're talking about right now is not shoot the messenger. If you're bringing a case, like Mr. Solution said, and I told you guys just a couple weeks ago, there is something called clean hands. You can't commit a crime in the middle of a criminal investigation and call yourself prosecuting a crime. You can't do it. So to Don's point, as far as, she can sleep with whoever she wants. You're damn right, Don, she can. But what you can't do is be in a position to hire them as a private contractor, pay out government funds to that person, and then that person in kind gives you money back by way of trips and dinners and cruises. That is illegal, Don. It has nothing to do with the fact that she slept with him. It has to do with she used government funds to her own personal benefit. That's what's in question. And you cannot do that as a DA, as a prosecutor. You cannot do that. And she can stand up in church and talk about she's a black woman and white men are coming against her because she's trying to powerful. You can say all that, Fani. But what it doesn't get you off the hook of, you lied and said you did not have sexual relationships or relationship with this man before 2022, before you hired them. Now, what they've done is they've gone and got records, phone records. They've got pings showing him spending the night at her house over 35 times. They've got over 2,000 text messages, over 1,900 phone conversations. All happened within 11 months in 2021. Now, I want you, Michael, and I want you, Don, to tell me how that right there is not an implication of someone who is unethical, of someone who perjured herself because she lied to the courts, and she's the officer of the court, and she's still worthy of bringing a conviction against somebody? Come on, guys, man. Y'all are so partisan until you're losing your common sense. It's obvious that this lady is a fraud.
Darius, Darius, let's be fair here. Neither one, Donald Trump nor Fani Willis, have been convicted of a crime yet. But looking at all the evidence on both cases, you mean to tell me that Fani Willis is the crooked one, but Donald Trump's not? You say Fani Willis is not credible to be a DA. Donald Trump's not credible enough to be the president of the United States.
They're
so
not mutually exclusive, Michael. Both can be the same.
Okay,
both can be true.
My question to you, who hands are dirtier? Are Donald Trump's hands dirtier or Fani Willis's hands dirtier?
I don't know. Donald Trump hasn't been convicted of anything yet either. So we can say that just
Fani
an
Willis.
Indictment doesn't mean an in, right. So what are you talking about then? You can't say one is worse than the other. Just because you've been indicted
on
something doesn't
Donald Trump is at least on trial. Fani Willis isn't on trial.
So
for
it
anything.
Doesn't matter. She's having a hearing. She's not on trial, but she will be because what's going to happen is when this thing gets discovered and thrown out, she's going to be up before the bar. She may lose her license and she may go to jail.
Okay, see, there you go.
Okay,
you
so
want
thrown
to be
out.
Thrown
you just
out.
Said it.
See,
you just said
the magic
word. You want it thrown out.
No,
you
I'm talking about.
There you go.
No,
you
I'm saying she's going to be
out
thrown
loud.
Out. No, guys, I said she's going to be thrown out.
Okay,
I don't care if
hey,
the case is thrown out. It probably will happen. But that's not – wait a minute. You guys are missing the – hold on. You guys are missing the point. We're talking about – you guys still want to talk about Donald Trump. But you –
hey,
Darius.
Because he's the one that's on trial.
No, we're talking about Fani Willis's actions right now. That's what you Democrats do every time. What about Donald Trump? What about Donald Trump? Can you focus on a single issue, please? My God. You will not answer Mr. Solution's question because you don't
focus on a single issue. Can you focus on Donald
you
Trump?
Will not,
can you focus on a
no,
single
we're talking,
issue, please?
The issue that Mr. Solution's brought up was Fani Willis. And you guys have no answer for him, so you throw in Donald Trump because you can't You cannot defend her actions.
Okay.
No,
and
you
if
can't
I just
Mr. Solution's question.
Okay. And if I may say so, we have to deal with this thing in an orderly fashion. And the way it has to be dealt with is Fani Willis ethical? Is she appropriate to deal with the case at hand? That's what they're dealing with now. And in a sense, she may not be on trial, but what is on trial is her integrity and the integrity of her office. That's on trial.
Mr. Solution, let me ask you this. Okay, Fani. Okay, the judge makes a decision. He says she must be thrown out. Okay, she's thrown out. Where do we go from here?
Well, the way it goes from here, okay, is you finished with your question? The way it goes from here is it goes back to a panel in Georgia, and then they will hand it out to whatever county, first of all, wants it and is capable of dealing with this sort of case. This is political in its essence. It's a political case, and it is to be determined if there was really a violation created, because one of the things that they are asking is, did Donald Trump believe that there had been, that the election had been stolen? Did he believe that? And that he was going against what he knew wasn't true. So they're going to his state of mind, if you please. And so that would be interesting to try and prove. Now, I understand Donald Trump doesn't want to go through this. I understand that. But that would be difficult to virtually impossible to prove. So this is if you just want a characterization, this is essentially a weak case. It's a politically orchestrated case, but hopefully I answered your question. It will go back within the process that the state of Georgia has. It'll go before a panel, and then they will determine which county can actually prosecute this case. And the next prosecutor can look at this case and say, thank you very much. I don't care to prosecute this case. And one other thing. All the complaints that Fani Willis has been proffering, everything like the threats she's been getting, et cetera, Fani chose to put herself in the line of fire. She made a conscious decision. So we have to look at her and say some of this is her responsibility. She lied to the court. She accepted gifts. They found out that there was $9,000 that was unaccounted for in terms of gifts that she received. You know, she came back with this, well, I paid him in cash. And I'm telling you, if they're prosecuting you for money laundering or money-related offenses, and that's what you say, they laugh at that. A prosecutor laughs at that. They do not accept that as viable evidence. So Fani put herself in this situation. She did it. And I don't want to believe this because I want to believe in the integrity of the system. But it appears, gentlemen, that Fani Willis is corrupt to the core, lying to the court knowingly. That's what a lie is. And in that particular environment, one can only accept $100 per year, and they have to make note of that. She also should have brought forward the fact that she was having a relationship with her chief prosecutor, covert. So Fani,
I'm sorry, we only got about 30 seconds, so I want to jump
okay,
in.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to jump in right quick and tell everyone thank you for listening, and we'll be back again next Sunday at 6 o'clock to finish this discussion, because the Supreme Court on Monday gets to make a decision whether Donald Trump can be on the Colorado presidential ballot. So there's a lot to talk about, but we'll talk about it again next week. I want to say thank you for everyone who's listening. We will be back again next Sunday. Thank you for listening. Thank you, guys.
God bless, everybody. God bless.
God bless.